From Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 Houston, this is Open Journal in Exile. Open Journal is the Houston community magazine of the airwaves. Join us as Duane Bradley and Stephanie Coleman explore the wonder that is the Petro Metro and the people who make it happen. And now from our temporary, socially distanced, alternative studios in exile, somewhere in the greater Houston area, this is Open Journal in Exile. Let the conversation begin.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome aboard. Thank you for joining us. You're tuned in to Open Journal. Hey, thanks a lot for tuning in and joining us on this In Exile edition of Open Journal. I'm Duane Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. In a different time, Jenny Stogner-McDavid would be jetting off to here and beyond as a crew member on a United Airlines flight. In addition to her duties as flight attendant, whose career goes back to 1990 and Continental Airlines, Jenny is the first woman to serve as president of the Harris County Labor Assembly. She's with us this evening to discuss her dual role as airline employee and labor leader, as well as the struggles caused by COVID-19. And with the election only a couple of months away, she likely has some ideas of who labor is supporting this time around. Welcome, Jenny, and thank you for joining us on Open Journal.
Thank you, Stephanie. I'm glad to be here. Appreciate the invitation.
Thanks for joining us, Jenny. I'd like you to just help our listeners get oriented with what the Harris County AFL-CIO Labor Assembly is, actually.
Hey, well, what the Harris County AFL-CIO is, we're a coalition of unions and different locals throughout the community pay per capita to a joint body that helps make political decisions and helps overcome maybe obstacles that some of our locals may be having. And we join together with similar programming to further labor's cause and the labor movement. We've had a central labor council here in the Harris County area for, almost a century, and we do have a recent regional body, the Area Labor Federation, which came into existence about 5 years ago. But we work with building trades, transportation, public sector unions, service industry, ever. We just try to come together and join together in union and further labor's cause.
As you've also been a flight attendant in the time of COVID-19, how has that life been and how has that affected the work that you're doing?
Well, obviously being in the airline industry, COVID-19 has hit aviation really, really hard. Demand has just gone off of a cliff. Mm-hmm. And so, but I'm very fortunate that I have a union contract that protects me, protects employees that will be getting furloughed come October 1st should Congress not act and pass any kind of payroll support extension program like was in existence during the first CARES Act. So because I have a union contract, the furloughed employees will have protections. They'll have recall rights. The company, I work for United Airlines, they won't be able to just hire flight attendants off the streets. They will have to go back to these furloughed employees and offer them their jobs back. They have to give 60 days notice. They've offered a severance package, what have you. So I think most of the locals, and we have lots of them that have really been drastically impacted by COVID-19. IATSE, the theatrical stagehands, I mean, they won't be going back to work till next spring. And then our Unite Here, SEIU, just the hospitality industry, building trades, just a lot of our industries have really taken a hit. And we're all thankful that many of us have union contracts that protect us in the bad times as well as the good times. And a fight, for workers' rights and workers' say and many other conditions, like whether school teachers, they're having a fight for personal protective equipment. And we just want to make sure our workers are protected, essential workers especially, that they're not being adversely exposed to the virus. I went to a wake last night for a fallen firefighter, a member of Local 341. He's an Association of Professional Firefighters. So many of us that are essential workers, we want to make sure we have access to protective equipment to protect us. And our unions are there to help protect us and consumers as well. And just hopefully we'll all be able to get through this crisis together.
How do you think, as a consumer understanding this process, how, you have a lot of new rules in place. There's a different type of etiquette to engaging. And have you seen that in aviation that the patrons are supporting some of the needs that you're fighting for as a union?
I think so. I mean, I think that that's necessary for consumers to have confidence to come back and fly. Mm-hmm. They want the airlines and they want the workers to take extra precautions because nobody wants to get on a plane and get sick or you know, carry this pandemic or carry this disease home to their families. And so I know, you know, when my husband and I, you know, the few times we have gone out to a restaurant during this pandemic, we feel a lot safer when we see protocols being adhered to. And so it's a mixed bag. I mean, we have passengers that are irate and don't want to be told to wear a mask, mm-hmm. and they consider it an infringement on their liberties. But for the most part, I think people are supportive. People are working as a community and working together and realize we're all in this boat together. And we've got to follow some new rules, some new guidelines to get through this. Mm-hmm.
So, Jenny, I was wondering, I have not been on an airplane since January. When's the last time you were up in the air? And how different is it these days from your perspective as someone who is in the air professionally, and maybe also the perspective from the passenger side of the equation, if you have that too?
Well, I think one thing that's really frustrated people in my profession is there really hasn't been a lot of federal guidance. You know, we are regulated at the federal level, the TSA and the FAA. And earlier this year, it was pretty much up to the airlines to decide to discontinue service to China. And all the airlines did so at different times. And I know Southwest Airlines was really quick to modify their service to help protect crew members and passengers, handing out prepackaged snacks and bottles of water. I felt like United was a little slow to respond to that. And so we have flight attendants kind of taking measures in their own hands. We were very pleased when mask orders came into effect. And of course, United now has a mask order that all passengers must wear unless they're, you know, consuming any kind of food or beverage. But I just think that some of the companies have been slow to implement changes and others have been quicker. So there hasn't been a lot of consistency, but I think there's growing consistency following CDC guidelines and realizing what we do and don't have to do to keep ourselves safe. But I do know in March, when I was flying, I felt like we were kind of slow to respond, but United has gotten with the program and we hand out bottles of water and prepackaged snacks and just have really eliminated a lot of the risk factors that our employees were encountering. Mm-hmm. But it's been slow to come, but it's been necessary because this summer we didn't really even see the numbers going down, but hopefully we'll be making some headway against this virus and restoring people's confidence to come back and see us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're tuned to Open Journal on Pacifica Radio, 90.1 FM in Houston. We are visiting with Jenny McDavid. She is a flight attendant for United Airlines, but as importantly or more so, she is the president of the Harris County AFL-CIO Labor Assembly. And we're having a conversation about labor and, of course, flying as well. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. Jenny, you broke ground as the first female president of the local labor assembly. Can you tell us about that?
Certainly. I was elected in October 2016 to fill the rest of the term of Dale Wortham. He came out of IBEW and died unexpectedly. In March of 2017, I was elected to a full two-year term and was reelected in March of 2019. We have had a female president of the Texas AFL-CIO, Becky Moeller, a few years back, but I was the first one locally, and it's been an interesting ride, and I hope there'll be more women to come. So we're certainly trying to diversify our boards and make sure women and people of color are represented and in leadership positions to fully represent the labor movement, because your union leadership really needs to reflect your union membership. Mm-hmm. And so we're working hard to do that.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen strides in your tenure there? Do you see that there's a long way to go, or is there hope for progress?
Well, it's funny you should say that. You know, when times are good, you think you're making strides, and then when you hit bumpy roads, sometimes it appears that maybe we do have a ways to go. 2019 was an interesting year with the municipal elections, and we had some difficulties in endorsement for the mayor. We've had some locals concerned about his questioning the constitutionality of collective bargaining with public employees. And of course, we had others that were very supportive of the mayor in the initiatives he's implemented as far as the Build Houston Better project. But in times of division, in times of disputes, sometimes the ugliness can come out in people. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're making headway, but we do have a ways to go.
The human factor is always a factor, correct?
Right. Absolutely.
So Jenny, I was wondering how did you get involved in union activity?
Well, I started flying back in 1990, and at the time I was a Continental flight attendant. At the time we had a
Miss Continental. Sorry, but do you miss Continental, like, and thinking of it as like our hometown airline? Because that I do.
I do. Absolutely. It was a smaller airline with, you know, just four bases. And, but yeah, we had the flight attendants were represented by the union of flight attendants based in Denver. And so I initially got involved in the Coalition of Labor Union Women. At the time, we were switching over from representation from UFA, which was an independent union, to the International Association of Machinists, which represents other employee work groups in the airline industry. So they moved their local to Newark. And again, in the 90s, I was active in, it's called CLU. And in 1999, there was a decision made for each base to have its own local. So 1999, the machinists chartered local 2339, and I became the recording secretary, served as trustee, vice president in both Houston and Newark. So I got involved in local administration in 99. And then also that's when I got our local here in Houston affiliated with the Harris County AFL-CIO. And so I've been a delegate to the Harris County Central Labor Body since 1999, last 21 years. And but before that too, I've been very active in partisan politics. I've been a national delegate to the Democratic National Convention twice, once in 96 and 04. So getting involved with the AFL-CIO was a great way to marry my political activism with my union activism and just really see that we're all on the same path trying to fight for worker rights and a better say in the workplace and higher safety in wages. Mm-hmm.
As we go through these challenging times with the pandemic, what are some of the unique services for members in terms of financial support or resources, or what do you do when the marketplace is just really challenged? I know you had mentioned some that can help in the short term, but what are some of the long-term benefits and strides that have been made because of the labor assembly?
Okay, well, for starters, you know, union membership pays. Union members get paid on average 11% more than non-union members. But as far as actual services rendered, we do, when the COVID-19 pandemic hit this spring, one of the first things our staff did was put up a tab on our website, a COVID-19 resource center. When we've had seminars and town halls on getting signed up for unemployment and just whatever. We've also had a disaster relief fund whenever Hurricane Harvey went. We sent out crews of teams to people's homes and did muck work trying to clear out their homes. Mm-hmm. And we've got a drive right now going on for Hurricane Laura. So we have a very active community services component that really mm-hmm. reaches out for our members in need when they need something. And not only that, but if we have a local that runs into some sort of labor dispute, right now our United Food and Commercial Workers local 455, they're having issues with Kroger. And so we've been helping them out on the picket line at some of their stores. Hmm. Last year, United Steelworkers had a lockout, and so we were out picketing with them. We've been to city council meetings trying to help get representation. They they do catering for United Airlines, and so we were working to make sure that they had a fair vote and would get representation. And we just try and be there for our members whenever they run into some sort of roadblock with management, and offer what we can to add value to being a union member.
I think that's a powerful piece that you mentioned, to understand that there is a lot of activism involved, as well as the politics and the business parts of your work and what you do for your members. And with politics, do you have any thoughts about that? And has your political activity picked up? And what does that look like when it comes to relationship to candidates?
Well, yes, it has definitely kicked into full gear. Of course, it's been an interesting year trying to figure out how we campaign for our labor endorsed candidates in the middle of a pandemic. Yeah. Normally, Labor Day weekend kicks off our political or electoral work. And we have at the state and national level, we have a committee that screens and endorses candidates. We call it COPE. It stands for Committee on Political Education. We normally have a big barbecue cook-off at the Pasadena Fairgrounds every Labor Day weekend. We canceled it this year as a result. So what we're trying to do instead, since we really aren't going to be able to block walk in neighborhoods for our key endorsed candidates, is we have launched a very strong digital media campaign. We are doing phone banking. We are doing text banking. And trying to utilize social media and other electronic resources to reach out to our members. So mm-hmm. It's an interesting year to be campaigning, but we have a lot at stake because with COVID-19, so many unemployed members, so many sick members, we think it's just really important to make sure we have elected officials that care about workers, care about worker safety, and make sure that we're all working in good working environments with decent pay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know in the past there's, you mentioned Labor Day as sort of the kickoff for the political season for AFL-CIO as well. There's always been this annual barbecue, as you mentioned, in Pasadena. I've been to several as a guest of my brothers in IBEW. And it's now canceled 2 years in a row, pandemic this year, hurricane last year. You are planning on bringing this back in the future, weather and authorities permitting, yes?
Uh-huh. Absolutely. But you're right. In 2017, we canceled it because of Hurricane Harvey, and then we canceled it this year because of COVID-19. We did have it in 2018, and we did have it in 2019. But what we did this year, we had Paul Puente, who's executive director of our Building Trades Council. He chairs the barbecue committee. And one of the things that we did a little differently this year was we had locals go ahead and do barbecue at their local lodges, and they distributed food to essential workers direct. They went to hospitals, they went to firehouses. IBW 716 participated. Our Galveston County Labor Assembly, Lee Medley helped head that up on Labor Day out in Galveston. We had several locals participate in that, but it was more of a private event. But we wanted to do something for the community, and we felt like that was a way for us to stay engaged. And hopefully we'll be back next year with a full-fledged barbecue at the Pasadena Fairgrounds.
All right. Wonderful. Well, I look forward to that. I was curious if you could share with our listeners here on Open Journal, Jenny, the endorsement process for political mm-hmm. candidates. How does such a wide, all-encompassing labor assembly such as AFL-CIO go through an endorsement process? And then maybe we could talk about some of the important races. I mean, they're all important, but you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Right. Well, we have questionnaires, and they're designed. We bring candidates in and we screen them. Of course, this year we had Zoom meetings for our screenings, right, for the most mm-hmm. part. With exception of some that we knocked out of the way, into last year or early part of this year, December and January. But we bring them in and we screen the candidates, and we let locals ask the candidates questions, and we kind of put them on the line where they stand on right to work, collective bargaining rights, other issues important to our locals and our members. And the state AFL-CIO, they have jurisdiction over congressional races and statewide races and multi-county races that go into more than one jurisdiction. And then, of course, locally, the assemblies, like Harris County Assembly, we had jurisdiction of races within Harris County, and the Area Labor Federation would take on the appellate court positions, like the 14th Court and the 10th Court of Appeals. And we just bringing them in, and we interview them, and it takes 2/3 vote of our delegates to garner an endorsement. So it can be interesting if it's a mm-hmm. Hotly contested race. But after we make a decision on who we do and don't endorse, then we have to make decisions about where we target our resources and where our best chances are of getting people elected. And we look to piggyback races. You know, it's a countywide race or a statewide race or even a national race. It's kind of hard. So we try and pinpoint precincts where we can go in. Maybe we're looking for a state legislative race to flip. As you know, we've got about 9 seats before we could look for a stronger labor majority in the Texas legislature. And with redistricting coming up, we're very hopeful for some positive changes to get a more labor-friendly legislature elected in November of this year. And so that's kind of how that process works.
Well, okay. So what is a big name endorsement that you can share with our listeners?
Well, the National AFL-CIO back in May already rendered an endorsement for president. That they are backing Joe Biden for the Biden-Harris ticket for president. We feel very strongly that Vice President Biden has had a good labor record, and we're not particularly happy with the record of the incumbent president as far as workers' rights or worker issues. And at the state level, the Texas AFL-CIO has endorsed MJ Hagar for the U.S. Senate seat. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, locally, you know, we're trying to target some state legislative races and some congressional races and do what we can to get a labor-friendly majority elected at the state legislative level and Congress as well. So that's kind of where we are.
That's great. Well, I think it's amazing the work that you've done. And as for those who may not have employment where they can be members, how can residents, the Houstonians, Texans, support the local efforts of your organization and learn more?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because we run into people all the time that are supportive of labor unions. And you know, the polls show that the public is overwhelmingly in support of labor unions. And there's so many people out there that would join a labor union if they had that opportunity. So mm-hmm. We're trying to make sure that the PRO Act gets passed at the national level, which makes it easier to organize a labor union at your work site and free from intimidation from your employer. But there's an organization called Working America, which is an organization that blue collar workers can join and kind of have a foot in the door with the labor union movement without necessarily having a bona fide collective bargaining agreement at your work site. But you can always contact our local office if you are interested in organizing your work site, because what we could always do is try and match up your line of business with a good international that works with that industry to try and get you a voice on the job. But we collaborate all the time with community organizations on voter registration drives, on the census. So we're making a big push to make sure all of our union members get counted in the 2020 census. So we collaborate with other organizations, faith-based organizations, Workers Defense Project, Texas Organizing Project, because we all have similar agendas, because organized labor is one of the biggest voices for unorganized labor as well, because we're trying to make sure when we go to the bargaining table, we don't have companies say, well, we can't do that because the open market is doing this. So if we can legislate a lot of the changes, increasing minimum wage, increasing safety standards, and that just takes things off the table when we go to bargain contracts. If every employer has to adhere to a minimum level of wages and safety standards. So different ways to help, but we love to collaborate with all sorts of groups to further our message.
So what would be the best local contact method? Would it be telephone, email, Facebook, other?
Yes. Yeah. Well, we do have a Facebook. The Texas Gulf Coast has a Facebook page. It's TXGCAFLCIO. And our website is also TXGCAFLCIO.org. We also have a Facebook group. It's called the Gulf Coast Labor Community. So you can find us on Facebook, both our group and our page, as well as our website. Hani Khalil is our executive director. He could be reached at our office. Our office is located off Telephone Road and Wayside off of I-45 South. Mm-hmm. We've been there for half a century, and, mm-hmm. and we still meet the fourth Wednesday of every month. The Harris County Assembly does 6:30. So if you're a union member, or even if you're a guest, we allow guests to come talk and address the delegates before our meetings. We've been meeting via Zoom because of the pandemic. So we're still having remote meetings at this point, but hopefully we'll get back to normal. No later than the beginning of the year. I'm hopeful, but we'll see what happens. We're just going to have to follow CDC guidelines and do what we can to keep each other safe. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Jeannie McDavid, we want to thank you so much for joining us to talk about some of your work, both in the air and on the ground and mm-hmm. in the streets as a labor activist. We thank you so much for joining us on this edition of Open Journal.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation, and I hope to be back when you invite me back.
Indeed.
Look forward to it. Take care.
Bye-bye. You too. Thank you.
Well, it is time to wrap this episode of Open Journal. I'm Dwayne Bradley. Check our archive at kpft.org, and please subscribe to the podcast, KPFTOJ. And thanks to all of you who have donated to keep this commercial-free radio station on the air, and those of you particularly who donated to Open Journal, we appreciate that. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. We are a dedicated all-volunteer production staff, including Rick Campbell, Susan Phillips, and Maverick. Open Journal theme music provided by Kevin McLeod. And be here with us for Open Journal next time for more great conversations. As always, thank you for your continued support.
And as always, we like to leave you with a thought of the week. This comes to us from B.B. King, who said, "I'm trying to get people to see that we are our brother's keeper. Red, white, black, brown, or yellow, rich or poor, we all have the blues." Take care of each other.